Welcome to the J3 University Podcast. I'm your host, John Jewett.
And I'm your co-host, Luke Miller.
Our mission is to elevate the physique coaching standard
and deliver the highest level of competitors to the stage.
Let's jump into today's episode.
All right, we are welcoming today Jamie Granville, one of the J3U coaches. Today we're going to dive into busting female fat loss stalls. And don't worry, guys, just because we're talking females, this actually has to do with males as well, because we have saw fat loss stalls occur. Having Jamie on because she deals a lot with females. She's a WPD competitor and one of our top level J3U coaches dealing with a lot of these issues, because we have people that come to us broken and looking for fixes. And so Jamie's had to deal with a lot of these fixes. And so we want to dive in and pick Jamie's brain on what should we look at when we're going and trying to decode the female fat loss stall. So Jamie, welcome on the podcast. Great to have you.
Excited to be on here.
How is it going in Canada, eh?
I had to say it. It was actually fantastic and beautiful. And then it just happened to snow a foot of snow yesterday. So, you know, minus 21 last night. So I actually head to Columbus tomorrow and then I'm coming to Dallas. So
yeah,
Going warmer to warmer.
Actually, in Columbus though, I saw. So
it is cooler up there. Yeah. Yeah. To hear that it's negative 21 somewhere with snow seems so foreign to Luke and I, because it's right now it's like, I don't know, 60 degrees out. The sun's out in Texas. So
yeah. No, I don't recommend it. If you're coming to visit Canada, do not come in the winter.
Steps are a massive problem for Canadian clients. Just FYI, like,
yeah,
treadmill is the best investment a Canadian client can buy.
Yeah. I actually remember I had come to visit Luke and train with him when I had first started coaching with you. And when I was in Texas, because the weather was so good, I was getting like a ton of steps because of walking everywhere, and a huge drop because I was in prep. So I get home and he's like, okay, well, let's just continue with those 12,000 steps. And I was like, it's minus 40. So, so I don't know if I'll be walking everywhere. So, yeah.
So for those that don't have access to the Texas heat and quick drops in rate, we should probably define like what stalls actually look like and kind of where the brain's starting to go when you start to run into issues. And so, like when you see the stall, like what's typically the first red flag that you typically see within a contest prep for some of these female athletes?
Usually one of the first stalls that I'll see is that, we start to see like down regulation of hormones in a contest prep setting.
How does that translate over, Jamie? Cause obviously you have clients, I'm sure you're getting them for one, maybe the fix, right? They're coming from some place where they're frustrated with coaching and they're just not getting the result, and maybe they reach out to you, or you're coaching along the way and things are moving along and then it starts slowing down. And how are you testing the waters, I guess, with the female to say like, hey, this is just slow fat loss versus someone actually arriving at a true stall? Because we hear this all the time, my fat loss stalled, like, but is it really? So when you're arriving at that point or someone's coming to you, like how are you kind of navigating those waters to see, is it a stall or is it just time to up the game?
Yeah. And I guess if you were to look at, okay, is it someone that I've had from the beginning of prep and I've had them in an off season as well. So I've been able to monitor everything along the way. And I know that they have consistency. I know they have adherence. Or is it like someone that I have gotten partway through prep and they've come to me because they have had a stall, they're frustrated, their coach isn't really understanding how to navigate that, and so they're frustrated and they would come to me. So one of the things would be if we have a consistent rate of loss and we know that the client's their adherence and their compliance is dialed. And this is like, say you've been with someone for their entire prep. And then all of a sudden things just start to slow down or stall completely. then we start to look at, okay, so what data do we have? And if everything has been consistent and everything was moving, then what has changed? And if it isn't through caloric deficit, if it's not through energy expenditure, if that's all the same, and say you've already, so you do a food drop, you do increase energy expenditure, and they still are stuck, then where do you go looking? So that's where I would look at something like having them having blood work done to see where they're sitting hormonally, to see if there is, say, downregulation with thyroid, which, I mean, we tend to see with females at some point in a contest prep, or estrogen. So
that's all insightful. And to rewind on like some points you made there, because I think some people come into that situation where things are slowing down and they get frustrated. And sometimes it is maybe they're getting less accurate in their caloric input or their output. And maybe they've never got the instruction of what accurate looks like. So where are you seeing the issues when someone, maybe they're just not tracking accurately enough to where they're inadvertently increasing towards maintenance? If you had to go through like the nutrition points that you maybe see issues with, or even the cardio output side.
I think that if you don't have it clearly defined around cardio goals, that it's keeping someone in a specific heart rate with an amount of time, that can often cause inconsistencies with energy expenditure, right? So it's being really clear to say, you know, are you consistently doing, you know, half an hour of cardio with your heart rate between this and this? Because as we progress in prep, we also get more fatigued. So is it that they're not tracking their heart rate as much, or they're backing off a bit and the intensity of cardio isn't as high as it has been? Or is it also that they are fatigued and they aren't getting as many steps in as they previously were, just from an energy expenditure point of view? And then just with nutrition, are they keeping their protein the same? So I've had people in the past who are like, oh, well, I thought that I would just add ground beef in instead of ground turkey. Well, then you are changing calorically your fat intake, and especially with fat intake, that's where we see the largest amount of calorie increase. So it can be small things like that that are just overlooked.
Man, Jamie, I had a funny one happen to me. I had a guy, I could not figure it out. Like, what? I was so frustrated. What is going on here? And so I'm digging and digging, right? You're trying to like pull all this out to what do I really need to push him harder? And he's like, well, I get hungry at night, because I wouldn't even ask this because it seems obvious. So I get hungry in the middle of the night, so I just drink a protein shake. Dude, what? Again, mind you, this is not on the plan to just have a protein shake when you feel hungry. So it's like, yeah he didn't know. Like you almost, for some clients, you can't make assumptions because you don't fully understand if you haven't dived into that communication with the client, like where their education level is. And we start operating with these high level clients that maybe they know it, but some people don't. Or vegetables too, right? I've seen this one where some people think veggies are like freebies and they just start adding them in, or maybe their last coach just gave them like a no guidance, like just eat as much veggies as you want. And then they stall and they're like, oh man, I don't know what's going on. The coach is getting frustrated, when really it was just a lack in the detail part of the planning and understanding on the client side, like, hey, those calories do matter, right?
Yeah, and even just with like whey protein, how many people actually use a scale to weigh how much they're using? Mm. Most people don't. They're just like free scooping.
And then that carries into everything, right? They're not like, they're using measurement cups for like oatmeal and then all this other stuff. And then you're just getting all these inconsistencies across the board. And then on top of that, like Jamie, I know we dealt with a problem with this a couple months back, is you know, the experience level of the client from a macro tracking standpoint and potentially limiting how much macro tracking substitution for subclients happens because they don't even have the skills to actually like swap potatoes for rice. Like they thought 100 grams of potatoes on the plan was 100 grams rice. And it's like, that is not the same. Like it's not pick your carb source of 100 grams, right? Like it's wild because, you know, you work with some high level athletes and they just do it. It's so easy, but man, it's just these little detail things that can really derail a prep.
Well, I know, John, you've talked about this before and it's about using sweeteners. So I actually just recently had a client who just out of the blue was like, and prep at the end of prep too, say, so are you wanting me to pull Splenda? And I said, well, is it causing any issues, right? And like, how much are you using? Expecting him to say like, you know, I don't know, like 4 or 5 packets a day maybe. But it was like upwards of over 30 packets. And if you add that up calorically, especially towards the end of prep, like what is that adding up to? Because Splenda does have calories. So it's little things like that, that people know artificial sweeteners aren't bad. However, they can cause disruption if you're using a lot of them and increasing your caloric intake.
Yeah, so. I mean, if you're this is more problematic for the female, right? Like if you're a female on 1200 calories and you now added in 20 grams of carbs from dextrose in your Splenda packets, like that's nearly 100 calories you just added in, almost a 10% calorie increase. Like that's how you easily find yourself at a stall, but really it's not stalled. It's just, you've changed your energy deficit. And so those things to start pulling apart where you get those clients, you can dive in deep to those areas and start tweaking and find out like, okay, we just need to be more meticulous with our tracking. And the 1200 calories you thought you were at, you're really doing 1500 from all this, maybe the extra veggies and not doing the big protein scoop and adding in extra Splenda packets. So it's just correcting that area, then fat loss might ensue from there. But then we arrive at and you mentioned earlier, like hormone disruption, like truly the client where you're just like scratching your head for weeks where they are nailing everything right. The cardio output's really high and the fat loss is just, it's either such a slow rate, it's hard to even measure week to week, or not moving. So there's that client then where that truly does happen. And I think a lot of females have been in that situation. And so you said about pulling labs and seeing where do you investigate there? And you mentioned thyroid and estrogen. Are there any other ones that stand out to you that should be looked at, or maybe even for someone that's following along, like what they might else be noticing, like just on the subjective side, or anything else that would guide someone around like, okay, this isn't moving. Like what am I looking at here?
Well, I think that there's, like if we were just to talk about like fatigue, right? So fatigue above and beyond what would be normal in a contest prep, to the point where, you know, say we, so I mean, fatigue will compound. So then we try to regulate that with, you know, taking cardio down, giving people rest days, because first we would try that first to see if it's okay. Do they need a slight deload from training? Is, you know, are they not recovering from training? Do we need to pull cardio out for a couple of days? Do we need to just, to assess it that way first? But I think that we get to the point where it's, you do that and there still isn't a response and there's still the fatigue. The other thing that can happen is digestion can be off too. So we'll have like a slowing with GI motility. So maybe females will start to get constipated. If they start to have the signs of like of thyroid downregulation. So maybe their body temperature is cold. So things like that can start to happen with talking about like having lower estrogen. It could be that joints start to get sore, brain fog, skin is dry, and they might have headaches. So it could be, I mean, everyone's going to present a bit differently, but at that point, if we have tried to do an intervention with a deload or, you know, extra food or rest, if it's still happening, then that's when I would be like, okay, let's run labs and see what's happening under the hood, as opposed to guessing. So I don't think that it's great to guess and say, hey, let's just chuck this at you and see if this works, because that's going to cut time off of prep as well. So if you've run into a stall, now we've already shaved off a week of no progress. So do we want to like just test things and say, hey, why don't we just add this in, like thyroid hormone, and see if it works, as opposed to why don't we just get labs done, make sure we see what the real underlying issue is and stop wasting more time that where we're not going to see any more progress.
I think you brought up a really good point here, because some people run the fat loss stall and things get thrown in, that's when we're now arrived at a lot of probably inappropriate approaches or inaccurate approaches of assumptions to coaching. Like what we see always is like the female stalls, and then it's like the demon is estrogen, right? Like let's add in the AI or the CIRM to the female, because that has to be why you're holding body fat now. When usually, right, like you already mentioned, fatigue's probably sky high, and likely they're already not having a menstrual cycle anymore, which is a pretty good indicator, even without labs, that likely you don't have a lot of estrogen present. Not always the case, but could be the case. And so just assuming it's that, you end up with someone that now is on thyroid hormone or an AI or CIRM, or they're now need provirone, this is for a hardener, when that's a very inappropriate drug for a female. And so it leads to coaching protocols that probably take an athlete so far beyond what it's manageable that they need to pull back even from this prep is likely the case. So I think your insight there, for one, is pulling back and trying to drop off fatigue is a great one, because that fatigue, for one, will just prevent the inability to keep pushing deficit harder. So you get lazier in everything you do. It's not your fault. It's just you aren't as efficient burning calories anymore. So that might be the reason. Pulling off, getting refreshed up might allow you to continue. However, it doesn't for everyone, right? And that's when we might see the hormone issues resulting from that. So,
and if we have a female too that is having that, I mean, there's a good chance that even anxiety might be popping up in there too, right? Which I find definitely can cause even more issues in just with their decision-making about, you know, and that maybe this is where we start to see people become less adherent or compliant, and it's slipping with food and, you know, things like that. But then, I mean, you know, you'll see some coaches who they'll have that stall. So right away it's like, well, let's just increase the clen, or let's add yohimbine in, which can both exacerbate the issues of anxiety that the person is having, which is just like a total like shit storm for them. So
she's like, can we cuss here? Is this a cuss and ball show?
It's not a bad cuss, is it? Oh, you're Lent, so you can't cuss.
That's so true. It's you know, that's a good question too, because it varies, but you know, in general, the anxiety driven and emotional responses of male versus female, they differ. Not to say that there's not like emotional guys out there and there's not females that are, I don't say lacking emotion, but could weigh into some of the more like analytical responses and delayed in that emotional expression. But you're right. Like think about having a fat loss stall in prep, and you have this show coming up and you're worried you're not going to be in shape and you have all this pressure. That emotional drive could cause poor sleep issues, right? And then in that, in turn, just the spiral continues: higher fatigue, poorer training, less fat loss. And then let's throw clin on top of it, or yohimbine, and that just spins that wheel even faster. So I'm sure you have to deal with the psychology aspect of these athletes and dealing with expectation setting too when you get into that, because you have someone that is running into a fat loss stall and worried about their show. I guess at one point, do you need to start thinking that we should be pushing this back? Like how long should we be trying to sort the fat loss stall before it's like, you know what, this isn't the right time to prep. Let's push it back a few weeks. Now, what do you find within that?
Well, I think that definitely it's, you have to look at how much time you've lost trying to fix that problem in the first place. How much runway do you have left? And is it going to be getting to the point where you're going to have to be going to major extremes, or like what we refer to as run the gauntlet at the end, so that the person is going to end up not looking great on stage in the first place? But following that, what are the repercussions that you're going to have to deal with after the show? So that is also taking time away. And it could be taking time away from their improvement season. So it's like, you kind of have to look outside of, I feel like I look outside of that, that show date as well. So it's like, what cleanup is going to happen, and how long is it going to take if we do take this person to stage? So how is that going to affect the year following? So if we do this, and if it's not worth it to put them on stage, then how do we have that discussion with them, to talk about, look, I think that it would be better from even just from a health perspective and physique perspective, if you waited and we pushed it back further so that we could fix these issues first and get you to a better baseline before, we can do that. Like before we can get you to the conditioning that is required in order for you to be competitive on stage, then what does that timeline look like now? Because it's like, I think people get so focused on just on that stage day that they lose sight of what happens following and how it's going to affect them moving forward, or like longevity with competing. So I think that it's just having the conversation with them to say, what is it that you want to bring to stage, and what is the cost of that in order to get to that place?
Yeah, I think with it reminds me of like having the discussions with clients. I was started reading this book called Never Split the Difference. It's about this FBI negotiator and trying to bring down, you know, these erratic, like emotional response people of like, I need a helicopter and you know, to escape this bank. How do you deal with that person like in talking to them? So with the, like the really emotional client, like this is going to be an emotional conversation to have of like, hey, we can't do this show. And you've been like focused on it for weeks on end and emotionally connected to it at a deep level. So how you approach that's pretty sensitive. I think you brought up some great points around that. It is about almost bringing in an undeniable logic to it and to their root emotion that they are trying to achieve out of this, right? Like you want your best physique on stage. That's what I want for you as well. So I think it's like relating to like, hey, we're on the same team here with how we currently are, with how you're feeling. I think to do that and you lay out the math or whatever you need to, it looks like this. And I think then you're like, they can help start to see that and remove some of that just initial trigger response and be like, well, I can't deny the logic here. So I think giving someone the logic that is that emotional person that might not be able to see that, or they don't even have the knowledge, right? Like they're not coaches. I think that helps a lot and how it's given. Right. Like that's probably a call, a face to face, so they can see like you convey that empathy and understanding versus an email response. Yeah. I think that's where we see a lot of the issues occur, right? In communication breakdown of how someone's going to read it in that emotional state versus if they could actually see you speak it.
And I think that if you actually put it out on the table for them and like you said, logically show them, you know, okay, we've burned up this much time with no progress. You're already at, I'm just going to throw this out there. You're already at 80 minutes cardio and you're 14 weeks out or you're 12 weeks out and you're already at 1,000 calories. and you show them like, okay, this is how you feel now, and you are on the struggle bus. So how much better is this going to get over the next 10 or 12 weeks? And are you going to be able to manage? Like, can you even function? Like, you're barely functioning now. How, where do we go with like dropping food, and where do we go with cardio? If we're not seeing any changes currently with the huge deficit and energy output that you have. And I think sometimes that helps to shed some light on, if you say, if we still have to decrease food and we still have to increase energy expenditure, like if you're struggling now with the amount, then how is it possible that we're going to increase the escalate this to get you to stage?
Thanks everyone for tuning in to today's podcast. Are you struggling to hit your peak on show day? Feeling lost in the off season? Upgrade your coaching game with J3 University. Our program covers everything from off season to contest prep to peak week, all based from real client results. Along with our comprehensive physique curriculum, you'll also get access to our forums with our J3U team to answer any questions you have, and live Q&A sessions to further your coaching and athlete experience. We are the source of education for top IFBB pros and coaches. Join us to elevate the coaching standard at J3 University. Let's get back to today's podcast.
I think for you as well, Jamie, just like you're a very pre-planned, well thought out person, right? A lot of this logic is lined out in the initial planning for the entire prep. I think more so where we tend to run in this is people coming in already in prep and they're kind of running into these issues, and then you're trying to salvage a prep. And so then this conversation starts to come up, because I think like part of the fixing the issues problem for most of your clients, just like from the preps I've watched you run and the shows I've watched you win and the preps that you've kind of delivered on over the last 3 or 4 years, a lot of these things are kind of pre-planned in the off season because of the data collection that's happened. And this is where a lot of value is put into that onboarding process with the coach being earlier on than where a lot of people expect it. Because I know from the level of detail that you operate in, it's like you already know from the hormonal perspective where this person sits in an off-season setting, where the potential outline for adaptation is going to occur within this athlete. We already have them optimized heading into contest prep to potentially avoid a lot of this, which is where that dynamic of communication that John brought up is where I think your level of detail and that communication kind of outshines, is because that starts to set up the person in an optimal place for actually getting them to where they need to be. And I think that's, I mean, you did a great job of this with the girl that did nationals this year. Kesha, is that her name?
Yeah.
Yeah, like first show season, she won an overall at a regional, got like center a second call out at her first national show. But you look at that beginning of that process to where she is now, it's like there was a lot of planning that happened in that situation, where you had to be like, hey, like this is how we optimize your process right now. Give me the time to execute on this process and we'll be there.
Yeah, she was definitely came to me not in a great place. And she was also, it was an interesting client though, because she was a shift worker that only worked nights, and she was working like 16-hour night shifts as an ICU nurse. And then she had a toddler, and she also has a partner who is a shift worker. So, but talk about execution, like that girl, like she planned ahead for everything. But for her, it was like, we had to make some concessions around her shift work. So food had to be different and cardio had to be different. And, you know, we had to really, really pay attention to like biofeedback around recovery, because after she worked a 16-hour night shift, there wasn't really much left of her following. So it was like getting her to buy into the less is more for in her case. So it was like, after you work a night shift, you're not training. You're not, you know, you're not doing cardio, right? So she executed really, really well, but it was we had to change a lot of behaviors and habits really quickly in order to get things in order for her to continue making progress after, one, we dealt with hormone issues, and then her gear protocol that needed to be, that just wasn't acceptable for what, where she was in prep. And then just like food strategies for her. A lot of her food was liquid, which, you know, wasn't great, and she was hungry, and it basically was like a 180 for her. And it didn't take her long. I just had to be very direct and very succinct about everything and give her a lot of direction. And she caught on really quick, and she made progress really quickly. And so that also helped the buy-in, so that she was like, oh, wow, this is completely different and this is working. And she nailed it the whole way through prep. And there was lots of back off days for her. But I mean, she came to me and she was incredibly frustrated and ready to throw the towel in. So
with the shift workers are so hard to prep, and I made mistakes earlier on with shift workers, not having ever done shift work myself, but now going through it, I realized that you're almost would have like 2 days out of the week that's not going to be fat loss time. And so almost like if you have whatever you planned, I think we need 16 weeks of prep, you might almost have like a whole month out of that. That's going to be those 2 days added up over that 16 week period of not having fat loss. So the shift worker might have a very long prep to be able to keep a deficit that is still reasonable in days where they have the recovery to make it happen. I think that's how they're going to have to see it out to get lean. Otherwise they just won't make it. It's just fatigue. It's too high to get that lean, and you can't push them harder at the end because it's just the snowball effect.
Yeah. And it was great for her because we did her first show, and then we went into nationals. So she, like, in between the main maintenance, in between that overall and nationals, she, like, I had to pull her food up pretty high in order, like, she just kept dropping and dropping and dropping in between those two. And she was barely doing cardio. Her food was high. Like, it was like the, it was like the ultimate relation, right? If anyone could have the situation that she did following that, it was like perfect. But yeah, I mean, all of that could have been avoided. Like everything that happened with her could have been avoided, but she just didn't have the right direction from the beginning. So
we're getting closer in time, Jamie, but you brought up one other thing on her prep that to touch on, because it's still so pertinent, and we do our best job out there to try to spread like what is more female friendly approaches for PED usage. What are some big like red flags that stand out to you and you're seeing these females on that you're usually having to correct? Any that stand out, maybe like your top three or something, or no need to rank them, but just some major ones you're seeing that are problems in the current coaching landscape.
Well, females use NPP, however, not the greatest. I don't think that it's the greatest choice for a wellness competitor in contest prep. But I think that a lot of what I see now is there's just an overuse of like orals. It's due to the fact that because a lot of females don't want to inject. So I think that that's just like, here, let's just give them orals. But there, it's not like using, like a lot of females are using Winstrol, which isn't a great, great choice for females. And I think that there's a lot of females come to me with, they don't have their baseline hormones in check, or they've never had lab work done, and they just go ahead and follow a gear protocol with something like EQ and then throw like an oral on top of that.
Right. So you're basically saying just, yeah, I don't even know where it comes from, where some of these compounds have derived, like that sometimes they're even look like smaller male cycles that you see females put on. I wonder, like in Canada, I know you coach people all over, but do you see like more SARMs come across the table, like with females, or not really, just still different orals that are present? Or,
well, I definitely see that females will use SARMs first just because of the fact they think that they're benign. Mm. Right. And so it's like an entry. So it's like, oh, well, I'll just use a SARM because I can get it at like the supplement store as a, like behind the counter or like the back door supplement. But it's benign. So it's not going to cause any issues. So I think that that's more of like, I see younger girls do that. And bikini girls that will use SARMs. But for across the board, usually it's like, lately the girls that have been coming across my desk, it's like almost all of them have used I used Anavar and I didn't like it. Like that was their experience with, they just, because Anavar is the drug for females, so I tried it. So that's mostly what I will see is the SARMs, just because of the it being benign, and then Anavar. And then from there, it's like Winstrol because they don't want to inject. Or injecting is very taboo, or it's using an injectable steroid. So,
which we know could very potentially be less benign with even some of the lower like masculinizing compounds being injectables. So it could be it's weighing it out, right? It has to go like, what's your most reliable product you have access to? And because there's a risk of just sourcing UG, say Primobolan, if it's not actual Primobolan, well, that's a big problem. Maybe the farm grade Anavar is the better option. But I think the issue here is the females not being shown the thinking decision process and going down of what is the right choice for her. And I think that's where the real coaching piece comes in, because you have girls that they don't know why they took what they took. It's like, no. Why'd you take Anavar? It's like, I don't know. I need to get hard. It's like, well, that's not what it really does. But so I think just their needs, especially with females in compound use, like to have some instructions given along of weighing all the options, understanding a little baseline of what you're going to be putting in your body. And I do think you have some coaches that they come from a certain segment of coaching. Like if you have one coach that does like a lot of WPD, then you might see more aggressive protocols in their other divisions, or even the opposite way. If you have like a lot of, say maybe bikini, that they might be underdoing it, which usually isn't the case, but yeah, they might not have enough approach for the WPD competitor. That might make that client not stick around because they do need to get a little bit more aggressive on the side. But all in all, I think you need a assessment approach that's going to align with the clients where they're at and the need of the athlete, and not just assuming of what they should be doing based on their division. Because like Luke, he had some freak ass wellness competitor that, you know, barely needs anything, like nearly natural and just like a ton of muscle. It's crazy, right? So, but you would assume it takes a ton of PDs, and that's not always the case. So there's an assessment piece that needs to take place.
Yeah. And I mean, you touched on the whole use of like an AI or CERN, right? And I think that's probably, if you were to ask me what makes me so mad is when I see these protocols that females have done where they're using, I mean, I've seen definitely some high weekly doses of, you know, like Luke would have used like 600-700 milligrams a week. Right. And but with that, it's like there's Masteron, there's Primobolan in play, and then they've got Arimidex and Nobledex in there too. I'm just going to take a deep breath because it shows me that people don't understand. Like they don't understand they don't understand why they are RXing this for people.
Like, yeah. And we've talked about this, like categorizing people into risk profiles, which is where that assessment piece John is bringing up. Like every person that comes through J3U coaching, you're putting them through those questions and identifications of what does this physique need to get to the next level, alongside what are the potential post-life considerations for the athlete, and then assessing all of this into a risk profile that then matches the compounds on the table, the level of usage that client is going to need and or desire, and then mapping out expectations for that goal set according to those combination of variables. And so like that's the process. It's that initial Q&A / interview with where their physique is and the level that they want to compete at, and then combining that into the categorization system that we use for categorizing risk within these athletes. And then it's just making those decisions accordingly.
It's a huge piece about having that conversation with your female athletes about everything to do with becoming enhanced if they aren't already. So they need to have an understanding of the process and why we would use the compounds that we do and what the different levels that there are and where we start. Because for the majority, that conversation isn't being had. And even it's like you'll see bikini girls that just at 8 weeks out, they just automatically are told to take a CERM or an AI just because that's just what you do at 8 weeks out so that you continue fat loss, right? So that they can pull the last bit off their legs or their glutes. That's why you need the AI. So there's just that miseducation piece that's happening. And as a coach, a female coach, it's even more important for me, I think, to communicate that with my female clients because of just my own experience with not being educated in the beginning and having to see. And I mean, I did everything I could to find education for myself, and there wasn't a lot out there until J3U, right? So so now it's like when people say that there isn't education for females or for coaching females or for ped use with females, I say it's BS because we have the female module that is like the highest level of education out there right now for coaching females and on ped use. And so I think it's just an excuse now if females are saying, well, I didn't know. And
yeah, we're definitely in the information age where not as much as taboo anymore, which is great. It's also bad too, because now everyone's armed with some amount of information and knowledge, but that's where you start separating out, you know, if you are a female and you're looking for who should I get information from? Who should I get coached by? Is the information piece, it should be there. However, real experts lie in experience and applied information. So whatever your goal is, you know, female competitor, like look at the athletes they coach. Are they getting a similar result that you want? And is it sustained? So don't let that client just be the flavor of the month, so to speak. Like you want to see those clients be able to stick with coaches too. That's important. We would want to have the longevity of a female in mind, because not only for your career, but also what comes after competing. You know, you don't want to look back and have regrets about what you did. I have female friends that, you know, they don't have children. Then when they thought they didn't want to have children, right? So things change, and you need a coach that's going to have those in mind and those conversations that are very specific to the female. And Jamie, I think you're a great one to have those conversations with. So if there is any females out there that are frustrated, that have run into these issues, or you're not frustrated and you just want a great experience to begin with, go to our j3ucoaching.com. You can apply to be coached with Jamie. And you don't only coach females, right? You coach males as well too, right, Jamie?
No, I do have a large quantity of guys too. Yeah. And I just wanted to say too, like just with female fat loss, we talk about like how it can be, it's so much more complex than with males. And that's why I think that it's like, we've talked about the, it takes a high skill set to coach females effectively because of the fact that there is so much fluctuation with everything. And, you know, I find it's far more difficult than coaching like a prep situation with guys. So, you know, there's so many things that play a part in it, especially just with adding in moving into enhancement too, because that all it can affect it as well. So it's far more complex. We are just like, we are intricate snowflakes, females.
it's for sure an advanced practice area. Completely agree. And thank you for what you do in taking on those females, because it is quite a challenge. We've all coached both, and can easily, you know, agree that females are by far more complicated to sort out and coach. So we'll wrap this episode up here, everyone. So thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Again, if you want to head for coaching, links are down below, or the female module is also there too. And we will talk to you next time.